Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is, in fact, the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron will be with us soon. He's had some grandparenting to do today, and so he's gonna join us when he can as we kick off a full week of shows. Been a while since we've done a full week of shows with the recent holiday breaks and the vacations and stuff. So, yeah, looking forward to five straight days leading up to our coverage of SEC Media Days next week. We're going to be there. I'll be there. Jacob from On the Line is going to be there. Doug from the Max Roundtable will be there. So we'll be covering SEC Media Days, 7 hours of live coverage from Radio Row at the Omni in Dallas next week. You're not going to want to miss it. It's Monday. Brian Matthews from yes. AuburnSports.com is in the house. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great.
Brian, I don't even want to tap dance around the most important thing. What was the music musing today?
It was way back 69 years.
Ooh.
To the first rock and roll song to hit number one in the U.S. and U.K. Can you guess the song?
Give me the
1955. Also,
American artist?
Nope. Also was the theme song for a popular 70s show for the first two seasons of it.
Ooh, is that Rock Around the Clock?
Yes.
Okay, Happy Days was the I would not have gotten it without the Happy Days clue. Yep. I was leaning towards Chuck Berry. But I didn't know if that
was right there too.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe it's a Chuck Berry song or something. I was gonna get honestly until the TV clue, just a little. I was gonna guess My Ding-a-ling until which I don't know if that's right in the time period. Look it up, Drew, if you don't know what I'm talking about. Chuck Berry had a big hit among Chuck Berry's big hits. Bill can talk about that when we get to him. But no, that's fascinating. Bill Haley and the Bill. We
in
were
his
just
comments.
In his comments, we were just we recently talking about American Graffiti, mm-hmm. which is a film that touches on this time. I think Wolfman Jack.
Wolfman Jack last week,
and he's in American Graffiti. Yep. The music from this time period is there, and it was on completely unprompted. They're doing a thing on TMC this month. It's just like sort of iconic 70s films, double bills. You know, movies from the 70s, they've shown What's Up, Doc? And The Way We Were, among others that are coming up. I think All the President's Men and the Condor, you know, those are coming up. The Conversation, you know, these are coming up later. So many amazing 70s movies. But one of them is one of American Graffiti is you know we just talked about, and yeah, a lot of very famous. I mean, yeah,
that song is in that movie.
Yes, it is. Yes. Among just so many iconic songs from that time period. So we'll talk about Auburn sports as well. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com.
Heard of it.
Media Days in about a week. We will we'll have Auburn coverage Thursday of next week. I suspect. You know, I don't know. I wonder what attendance will be like from the Auburn contingent, especially with it being the last day, or if some folks feel like they can get a lot of that information elsewhere from both the coaches and players. Speaking of the players, we now know which three players will be representing Auburn at SEC Media Days next week. We've got the announcement today that it will in fact be Eugene Asante. Eugene Asante, who I was on Doug's show earlier today. I predicted three players. The only one I got right was Eugene Asante. He's been front and center this offseason as a representative of the team, a leader, and had such a great season last year. I think is one of, we had someone ask about Auburn's best chances of being represented on the first or second team or any all-conference team next week at Media Days. I think Asante is one of Auburn's better shots at linebacker, although it's a crowded field. Very good experienced linebackers around the conference, but yep. I would think that Asante and Keldrick Falk and Peyton Thorne.
Yeah.
Keldrick Falk, 5-star local kid. A lot of folks tab him as a potential breakthrough. Looks like he's going to have a lot more. I mean, played quite a bit as a true freshman last year. Looks like he could play a lot more as a second-year defensive lineman this year. And then the selection of Peyton Thorne, the starting quarterback, took most of the snaps last year at the position and has spent this offseason as Auburn's number one option at the position. It feels more like his team than it did at points last year because Robbie Ashford was such a such a prominent part of the conversation. Let's start with the three choices, Brian. What do you think of the? Auburn had other options on the board, other veterans at different positions. I kind of thought Dylan Wade had a shot because he started so much last year. He's sliding into guard. He's a Texas guy. Rivaldo Fairweather could be an all conference contributor, sure, at that position if things go well. But Auburn going with Asante, they're going with Falk, and they're going with quarterback Peyton Thorne as the representatives at Media Days next week.
Well, I'd like to go back to Keldrick Falk because I don't remember any sophomores, maybe there's been one or two, ever representing Auburn at Media Days. It's just not something that happens a lot.
I feel like they took Bo Nix.
That's possible.
I could be wrong. For some reason, I feel like Bo Nix went after playing a lot as a true freshman, but he would be the only one in recent memory. Maybe they took, I don't know if they took Tank. For some reason, I want to say they took Tank as a junior. But I would think that Bo Nix would be the only one in recent memory that Auburn took as a sophomore at SEC Media Days. That's a first round pick. And a guy who played a lot of college football. So you're in pretty good company. If it's just you and Bo Nix.
Yeah, but I think that says a lot about Keldrick Falk as a person, as a leader, as a guy who works his tail off, right? He's an incredibly gifted football player. If you just look at him, he is big, and you can just see how big and strong he is and put together. And then you watch him play, you can see his athleticism, you can see how he gets after it, and then you talk to people about him, and they talk about his leadership and his work ethic. So Auburn got a really good one in Keldrick Falk, and they're going to get another really good one in his brother, Caleb, here pretty soon too. So I just think that says a lot about a young man to be representing this team as a sophomore, a true sophomore, for SEC Media Days here in another week.
You know, Bo Nix might have only gone – maybe he went 2 years in a row. Anyways, you're absolutely right about what it says about the vote of confidence in Keldrick Falk, and it's only going to fuel more talk that he's one of your breakout candidates of your second year players. It feels easy because he was probably the most highly touted of the second year guys coming out of high school. But yeah, I mean he played. You think about the second year guys that think about the second year sophomores that got a taste of playing time last year, right? Like your Keldrick Falk, I mean, varying degrees of taste of playing time. Keldrick Falk, Kayan Lee, Connor Liu. Like these are all Jeremiah Cobb.
Yep, all stars are going to be stars.
Yeah. And these are all guys that I think, you know, would you be, of anyone I just named, like if they're sitting there at the end of a very productive sophomore season, you're not going to be surprised based on what you know of those.
No.
Of those four players in particular.
I'll be a little bit surprised with Cobb, not because he doesn't have the ability, just because he's got two really talented players in front of him.
But he also feels like a guy who could get the ball a couple of times and make a really compelling argument that he's.
Oh yes, he's like, a home run hitter.
Yeah, I mean, it says nothing about the ability of Jarquez or Damari Alston or anything like that. Auburn going with Eugene Asante. Not all that surprising.
And he's everything I said about Keldrick applies to him as far as his work ethic. He is probably the best leader on the team, I think, overall. And then he's also a proven, very talented player, and a player that's really just made the most of his ability, right? I mean, just a couple of years ago, he couldn't play for Brian Harsin defense.
He's one of the best stories on the right. team. Like maybe the best story on the team, all things considered, because it's a guy who, I mean, going into last spring, he was a non-factor right. on the depth chart because he'd been largely – I mean, I think folks were kind of surprised after his first year.
He was put on the scout team.
I think folks were surprised after his first year that he stuck around amid the coaching change yeah. and, you know, how difficult his first year had been. Not only does he stick around, he fights his way – you just said the scout team, right? Like, he fights his way from the bottom. I mean, no, you know what? No, that's not true. He fights his way from off the page yeah. of the depth chart. Yeah. Like he's not at the bottom of the depth chart. He fights his way onto the bottom of the depth chart and then fights his way up to very early on. He's clearly an impact player at linebacker compared to Auburn's other options. And we had a caller last week say, I think it's compelling. I mean, it's you can make the case. Auburn doesn't win at Cal without the defensive heroics of Eugene Asante in key moments. So, yeah, I think it's one of the better stories on the whole team to go from completely off the page of the Bill Cameron depth chart was he on the page?
He was on the page
the whole time.
He wasn't at the top though. He
every scholarship player is on the page. Is that the only at to say nothing of because I'm talking about how far he's come.
Oh, like, yeah, no question.
Is the only reason he was on the page because he was a scholarship player? Because he wasn't – I mean, that in that first year, like, he was
– Oh, yeah,
he was,
yeah, you're right. I mean, there were walk-ons that played as much as he did.
To fight from that to a no-brainer choice to go to SEC Media Days, and I think a guy who's got a chance to – I think he's going to win over a lot of these folks with his personality at Media Days and probably deserves votes anyway for, again, crowded field at linebacker – but deserves votes anyway. It's a really cool story, and I'm glad he's going to get to go to SEC Media Days and represent Auburn because it is in a era of college football that is maybe lacking for heartwarming stories. You know, it feels more transactional and mercenary than ever before. That this is a pretty cool story of a dude fighting through adversity and going from close to off the page of the Bill Cameron depth chart.
He was deep in the rough. When you're listening to classics and things, he was a deep track.
I would say that Peyton Thorne has a chance to write a beautiful ending or story to his college career. Right, he has a chance to have an incredible story if he can bounce back and have just an above average or a good season for Auburn.
I mean, if he has a year similar to what he had at Michigan State, right. It'll go a long way to giving Auburn a chance to win, enough ball games to be talked about.
That's Bill Cameron, by the way.
No, my ding-a-ling was like one of the last.
Okay.
Yes, from Chuck Berry. If he'd come out with that first, you probably would have never heard of him back in the 50s. No, 1955.
So that
would not have flown.
So in 55, it would probably have been more of a Johnny B. Goode
or school days. Yeah,
School Days wouldn't have been a bad guess. Yeah.
That's an American Graffiti.
Yeah, School Days is an American Graffiti. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, a great movie.
I'll shut up about it.
I have not
seen it in a long, long time.
I believe TCM has it on demand for you cable folks out there. I'll
tell you what else I hadn't seen in a long, long time that I've just watched over the last couple of days. I had not watched Snow White or Cinderella, the original versions, in a long time. Two-and-a-half-year-old just enthralled.
The hand-drawn Disney stuff plays so well. And I think no one doing it anymore, no one doing mm-hmm. films like that anymore, makes it all the more I bet you know she'll probably love Dumbo. Once you get to that point, because films, modern animated films for logistical reasons and stuff aren't really doing that classic style, and it's only going to stand out more and more the attention span thing is going to get for folks. Are they going to be able to dig hour and a half, 2 hour movies? But a lot of those Disney classics are short mm-hmm. too. They're smart to keep those things about 90 minutes. Yeah, 90 or fewer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're just underway here. I'm glad I made it and appreciate you guys getting it started. Yeah, we've got with car difficulties and You know, watching Kennedy here while Matt and Ariel, you know, travel across Europe on their way back from Amsterdam. It's been a challenge, but yeah, everything's good. I think everybody has their vehicles now, so we'll be good to go. And as you said, a full week before. You know, some folks head out toward Dallas. We'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline. That is sponsored by Skybar. And the number 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the text box, available. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
All right, we're just underway. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Dixie Overhead Door when you need a new garage.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls. Ooh, it looks like we're about to get one of those summer afternoon thunderstorms, which, you know, honestly, look, it's a long way till I've got to worry about what everything looks like. Rain on it. I got too many things that are going to die. Since we're going back and forth between two houses right now, watching Kennedy, she's more comfortable. You know, obviously she's going to sleep in her bed and things like that. So we're back and forth. Don't have time to be doing everything. So it'd be nice if the sky would go ahead and just water the lawn.
Any relief from goodness, 90 plus and
oh, it is oppressive.
Yeah, any, you know, 90 plus clear or partly cloudy is
90
is,
plus is, with the humidity.
Yeah, and we're gonna get roasters these next couple of weeks is what it sounds like. So everybody be safe. Also, you know, there's a little bit. I guess we're lucky. I think Dallas isn't being impacted as much as other parts of the state, but media days were a week earlier, you'd be dealing with a hurricane.
Yeah, that's right.
In the area right now, potentially dampening, you know, and the All-Star festivities as well, which, you know, are scheduled for next week. And we'll probably talk about the All-Star selections if you have any opinions on that.
Yeah, I mean, the All-Star rosters are they're set until some players opt out for injury or whatever like that.
Surprised by how many.
First, there are a lot of newcomers.
I, you know what? And I thought there were quite a few NL teams. Maybe it's not all that shocking, but quite a few NL teams that only had one, right? Mm-hmm. You think about what is Shota's the only Cub. Marte's the only Diamondback. It's a reigning NL champion from the World Series that only has one. You've got, I think, the only Cardinals, the closer. That's Kelsey, a surprise. Yeah. The only Met is Alonso. I mean, I think with Nimmo and Lindor out there, I think Alonso is the only Mets a little bit surprising. But I mean, there were some, it's a really cool roster, like you said, because of the number of first timers. Mm-hmm. But there were also some notable missions, and some of it feels like it was cascading, right? Because like, oh, you can't take too many shortstops, so you got to leave this guy out, and then you got to open up a spot for this guy. But C.J. Abrams, I believe, is the only National.
The only Nat. That's right.
So I mean,
and I thought Finnegan would probably make it with the year he's having. They didn't go not as many relievers, not as many closer types.
Fellow from ESPN.com said his number one omission in the NL was Irvin from the Met, from the Nationals. Speaking of which, after the season,
he pitched great last time out, especially guys. He was right down under three.
After the last month he's had or so. So I mean, there were a couple of and Mackenzie Gore has had some excellent moments this year. Maybe not quite at the All-Star.
Lately. That's the thing. Yeah. You know, that's something usually you want to be, you know, hot as they're making those selections. But
if I can be a homer,
there's still room to add guys.
If I could be a homer, I would say Gavin Stone has been.
His last time out was a little rocky.
Yes, his worst outing of the season in his most recent one, but a pretty good outing nevertheless. A pretty good season nevertheless for the Dodgers rookie.
All right, so we can talk that if you would like. You mentioned the players that are representing Auburn. Did you get around to talking about Peyton?
Talk a little bit about Peyton Thorne, but it feels like we did venture into other territory there.
Yeah, we can talk about that more. Auburn
are
picking
you surprised?
Up a couple of commitments.
Are you surprised by the Peyton Thorne selection?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I mean, and I think Hugh Freeze has tried to let people realize that he feels pretty good about his situation there at quarterback. Now we'll see. It'll be on Peyton to perform to that level.
Brian made a really good point in the last segment, which would be if Peyton Thorne finishes his Auburn career with triumph, you know, if he's winning big games at the end of it, it would be in the tradition of other great stories we've had at quarterback in the last 20-25 years. You think about Jason Campbell, you know, faced.
Ben Leard?
Yeah, Ben Leard. Mm. Sure. I mean,
never forget that game against Georgia.
That would be a bigger
the adversity.
What Peyton Thorne could do. I mean, unless he won a championship or something, wouldn't probably be as big a change, a big an improvement as Ben Leard.
Folks would point out that Cam Newton and Nick Marshall had turbulence. In their college football.
Brian,
careers.
You'll recall that. There were a lot of people that were tired of Stan White. We're looking for him to not be the starter in 93.
That's right. And he had an incredible year. Unfortunately, it had to come to an end with an injury.
Yeah.
And then Pat Nix came off the bench and threw one of the most incredible passes in Auburn history to beat Alabama.
So I mean it definitely wouldn't be the first time something like that has happened, but we'll see in What are we talking is about? It's about 7 weeks now, isn't it?
Just about. Yeah, I mean, we are running
crazy to think.
We are running out of Saturdays
between
now and the season opener.
I mean, it's basically SC Media Days, then it's
start of fall practice,
then it's fall camp,
fall
and
camp,
then boom,
game.
August 31st.
Yep, no question. All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I was going to ask you I just happened to see a video highlight on a Facebook post of the Auburn baseball stadium. Apparently, they're making upgrades to Plainsman Park along first baseline. Home plate. Is that seating or is that amenities or can you go into that?
It's a little of both. I mean, it's going to be some premium seating, and I mean, as far Brian, I don't know exactly what the difference in total seating is going to be. There will be more.
Oh yeah,
but it's maybe not as much as you would think if they were just double decking with regular seats.
Right. They're going to be club areas down the first baseline, and underneath it is going to be some newer, food and beverage options. They're going to put under there, and then they're also redoing where the old press box was and everything behind.
It'll be premium seating there.
Boxes there, so. And I don't know when they're actually going to do the upgrades above the left field wall yet. I don't know if that's coming for.
I thought that was the second
it might be.
Phase, but might I be. But I'm not 100% sure. But no, it's going to be a little of both, John. The other thing that is going to be a part of is, I mean, that will also be something that will be beneficial during football season because it will be a great place for premium. Mm-hmm. For suite holders or whatever, the people that have those areas will have their spots to overlook Tiger Walk.
Yep. And if you've been by there recently, all the steel looks like it's up and done.
Yeah.
And they've started, I don't know what the word is, but they started putting in.
The infrastructure's up.
Like insulation or something. I don't know exactly what they're doing, but yeah.
Yeah, just looking at the video, it looks like a large area. So.
It's going to be really, really nice.
So that's about all I got. Glad to hear y'all back on the air, man.
All right, John. Yeah, thanks for the call. Yep, we were off Thursday and Friday, so it's been a little while. Hope everybody had a great 4th. I mean, the weather held up on the 4th for most outdoor activities, including the fireworks show.
I was there. It was good. They still had an issue with getting all the fireworks over the tree line, but it was still really good.
How far back are you when you're saying you're there?
I purposely went farther back than usual. So I was at least 2/3 of the way back.
Sure.
Between the stage where the band is and where the little gravel parking lot area is. So, yeah.
I can reveal. I mean, the secret's out now. So, I could tell, the old.
People just take this down for next year.
Well, no. The place where the groom buses and the Auburn HR office, the former Bruno's.
Right.
You can usually find parking in there. I think a lot of folks took it on themselves to create parking spots and made something of a mess there, where they, you know what I mean?
When it's too many people are doing that.
Yeah, like they, you know, I'm gonna park at the end of this at the, you know, the, this thing that's in, it's gonna, anyways. so I was able to avoid too much. But it was a great show, and yes, kudos to the city for putting on a quality fireworks show, and thankfully the weather cooperated.
Oh yeah, so we hope everybody had a great 4th. Yes, we are back. And here, love to hear from you. We'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Bill, Dan, and Brian here on the Monday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 27 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Brian sitting here listening to the last minute moves for the week for the Greystone League. Even though
games
started early today, but I usually give people a break as long as it's as long as the players that are involved haven't already put up numbers for the day.
Yeah, some guy hit 3 homers for the Mets today.
Yeah, I couldn't suddenly
move him into the starting lineup today.
Was it the Pirates? The Pirates pounded the Mets today.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, 8-2, I believe. Mitch Keller got his 10th win. There's another guy that could be an All-Star.
Do you think Skeens should be?
Yes, I do.
It's Skeens versus Sale.
I think Chris Sale should be your starter. I think Skeens is a guy that really deserves a lot of thought. I would say, where do their spots fall in the rotation? If Skeens is on, if he's had 4 or 5 days, just depends on how much rest has Chris Sale had. Chris Sale's leading the majors in wins.
If Skeens and Sale are both healthy and available to be the starter in the All-Star game,
I'd probably start Chris Sale because Paul Skeens, health permitting, is going to get plenty of opportunities to be a starter. He, by the end of the year, may be the Cy Young winner in the National League. He's going to be I believe he's going to be the Rookie of the Year.
He's the best story because he's the rookie, but Sale's a great story too.
Oh, Sale is
bouncing back from this injury and pitching as well as
Chris
he has.
Sale is healthy, he's dominant.
Yep.
He has been great throughout his whole career when he's been healthy. It was a great pickup for the Braves. You know, the Braves,
you know, that reminds
are
me
very
of,
are very I, fortunate that Chris Sale's been healthy and go ahead.
What would you say, like Josh Beckett in that regard, right? Remember how Beckett had real swings of up and down, and it was usually more health related than performance related, and for multiple teams, right? You could say, I mean, Beckett had periods of dominance for multiple teams, but please, yeah, I mean, as you're saying with Sale, I would agree with you, give him the nod as the starter.
Oh yeah, and but Skeens. Skeens is the, if I'm not mistaken, he is the first number one pick to ever be an All-Star the next year. I mean, how about that? Yeah. From number one pick overall last year to an All-Star and possibly starting the All-Star game
also won an
a year later.
At LSU, too.
Yes.
Wouldn't be a gimmick if they went with Skeens as the starter. Wouldn't be he was the number one pick, oh, he's a rookie. No, it would be because he's been one of the 2 or 3 best pitchers in the National League this year.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, well, since he's been up, he's been as good as anybody. I mean, he's had a couple of starts that seemed. Drew, I guess you saw what appeared to be a mediocre start from Paul Skeens because he wasn't throwing 100. He was only throwing 98, 99. But I believe he's yet to give up more than 3 runs in an outing. I mean, that is amazing. Usually, everybody's going to have a bumpy start or two, and that just hasn't been the case for him. So you'll see him, I believe, in the All-Star game. But yeah, I mean, sure, he deserves to start, but I think Chris Sale has earned the start. All right, I wanted to get Brian's thoughts. One of the things we haven't touched on yet, last week, We were talking about the concern from some Auburn fans because Auburn had lost a couple of commitments. Well, they've gained a couple of commitments now.
And probably some more coming fairly soon. Hollis Davidson decided to celebrate the nation's Independence Day with his recommitment to Auburn. Really talented tight end, got great size. I saw him in person when he visited back in June listed at 6'6", 230. You watch his tape. He's really good in the red zone. You know, high points the ball, competes for it very well, has good hands, pretty athletic when he gets the ball in the open field. And then what I really like about him is he's not afraid to play physical. He's still got to get bigger and stronger, mm-hmm. but he will mix it up. And I think he's going to be one of those three-down type tight ends once he gets to Auburn and gets in that strength and conditioning program. And then Jacoby Ward committed, I think it was Saturday.
Yeah.
He's from Savannah, Georgia, a big physical guard, 6'4", 325-ish. But what I like the most about him is when you cycle through his film and you get to the part where it shows his pass pro, he is so light on his feet for somebody who's over 300 pounds. It's just incredible the way he can move. And I just think someone with that athletic potential, that size, and it seems like he has a great attitude and work ethic and want to. I just think he's going to be a very good offensive guard for Auburn here in a couple of years. Just needs to redistribute some weight and get bigger, stronger, you know, like a lot of linemen coming out of high school. But he's going to be a really good player for Auburn.
Yeah, so that gets Auburn, I guess they're back to 16 now, right?
They are back to 16. Let's see, the cornerback, name escapes me.
The former Ohio State kid?
Yeah.
Blake Woodby?
Blake Woodby. I think he could pop at any time to Auburn. Auburn is a definite team to beat there. And we'll just see if anything else pops up between now and Big Cat. But I think it's going to be a big, really big Cat for Auburn with the number of prospects there. And what I'm expecting to be is maybe some action, too, you know, as far as commitments and things going down.
So. Do they have 26 commitments? And you know, I guess that would be would that be something to even? I mean, because you're talking about.
Oh, you mean class of 26?
That's what I mean. Okay. I mean, not 26 in number, but I mean they have, because they obviously much of the focus has been on building the class of 25. But Brian, you've talked about stacking classes.
Yeah.
I would imagine the late summer 2024 is when you start to turn your attention towards the rising juniors and guys that you're really going to be recruiting heavily for the class of 26.
They have two right now, two really good ones. Denarius Gray is a wide receiver from Hollywood, Florida. You know, a really talented young man, 6'1", 170 plus. And then Kyle Ellis, a big offensive lineman from Cartersville, Georgia, 6'4", 290, is also committed for Auburn in that class. I would expect that to pick up. They're going to have a lot of their top 26 kids in. I know there's some other 26 targets in state that are getting close to announcing a decision. So I would expect that to be five or more headed into the fall, probably. And I would not be surprised if Auburn's over 20 commitments in the 25 class once we get into August.
Well, considering they're at 16 right now.
Yeah, they should be.
And they've got a big bunch coming in. And who was it that just announced today that they're going to –
Keenan Britt's announcing
on the 29th, which is right after Big Cat.
We'll see there.
So, I mean, well, that's not bad. I mean, Auburn probably wouldn't mind a lot of kids making an announcement right after they leave Big Cat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's something. It's funny. I mean, there was some, ho-hum, well, it's a dead period, nothing's going to happen. There have been plenty of kids that have been making up their minds or either decommitting, committing, flipping. I mean, there's been a lot of action.
Yeah, there has been, and I really feel like, I know the high school coach would like it, but having the early sign-up period, maybe the first Wednesday in July, seems like it would work out perfectly after these kids take all their official visits at the end of May and through June.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the other sports all have an early signing period before they start practicing and playing their senior year.
They do.
So we will, you know, we'll see. I mean, there are all kinds of proposals and things that are up. What were the we were talking about a couple of those last week, Dan. I've completely gotten thought about other things here over the last few days. Remember some of the proposals that were being discussed that the NCAA was about to.
Well, we know about the coaches, right? We talked about that with Jason,
right?
That they've changed the
fact that there's no limit to
right.
Yeah,
as long as you're a full time staff member, you can coach.
You can designate off campus recruiters and on campus coaches, but they don't necessarily have to be the same people. And that feels like a significant change that could help programs with deeper budgets and more resources. Trying to think of the other changes you're talking about.
I think that was probably it when we were talking. Yeah, we were talking about that.
The portal, right? The number of days in the portal is something that.
That's the
reducing that,
the portal to 30 days now. What I still haven't seen. Does that mean it's going to be one 30-day portal or two 15-day portals? Windows.
I don't know.
I mean, because it was 30 days. You know, once the regular season ended, then you had another spring portal. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they'll just go to a 15-day window once the season ends and another 15-day window at the end of spring.
Well, I think when they did the study, they found that most people that made the decision to leave did it within the first 2 weeks.
Right.
So it makes sense just to have it be they, so they 15
could,
or so.
Maybe they'll just be two 15-day windows, one from like December 20th. You know, you could do it basically like from December 10th to Christmas.
Yep.
Okay, and Christmas – everybody, the packages all have to be wrapped yeah. by Christmas, yeah. and then you can have it again at the end of the spring, because there are going to be some players that, you know, find out because of the additions and things that happened during the spring or coaching changes that they might be better off somewhere else. So it makes right. sense that players would want to be able to get back in the portal. Now, the SEC, I'm sure, isn't going to want to change its stance that you're only able to play immediately within the SEC if you transfer in the early period.
Yeah. But again, somebody files a lawsuit, they lose, and that changes. So
right.
we'll see how it goes.
Nobody sued the SEC yet about that.
Not yet.
Yeah. That's the key. All right, 334-321-1390. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise here on the Monday Drive?
Yeah, looking forward to Media Days next week, you know, seeing the I think Seeing how the media votes on some of these, you know, who the projected order of finish, what the first and second teams look like from, you know, among some of the more competitive categories.
It's going to be crazy because for the first time, it's not going to be predicted order of finish in the East and West. It's going to be 1 through 16.
And we'll see. I still think Texas and Georgia. Georgia and Texas.
Yeah, I think it'll be Georgia, Texas, Alabama is 1, 2, 3.
I think that's probably right, and we'll see who pops up among Ole Miss, Missouri, LSU, Tennessee, Oklahoma as other teams maybe in that mix, and where Auburn falls in that category as well.
Auburn, you want to be above the middle of the pack.
Yeah, well, I don't know that they'll be predicted much above the middle of the pack.
But you want to finish.
Definitely.
I'm curious to see how many of the teams on Auburn's schedule are predicted ahead of them. I would think the number could be 6, depending on how folks view Kentucky. I would expect Auburn to be picked ahead of Arkansas and Vanderbilt. But the other 6 teams in the league, I think that Alabama, Georgia, Missouri, A&M, and Oklahoma, I think will be picked ahead of Auburn. And then the question is, Will the voters also put Kentucky ahead of Auburn in the predicted order of finish? I could see them being right next to each other.
Yeah, I don't think Auburn's going to be picked high. I think Auburn is going to have to surprise people.
Auburn's had 3 straight, subpar seasons. Yeah. So Auburn's going to have to prove it.
I know Phil Steele came out with a top. He's got like a 61 or a 50 or something like that. But he had 6 teams on Auburn's schedule ahead of Auburn, and it was the four teams Auburn plays on the road, plus A&M and Oklahoma, which I think would be maybe you're predicting Auburn to go 6-6 if that's the way you view it. You know, if you think there are 6 teams on the schedule that would be favored against Auburn if you were trying to pick the game right now in the preseason, and then it's up to Auburn to overperform. I think if Auburn's better than 6-6, you would think it's either someone on the schedule or more than one of those 5 or 6 games, you know, someone on the schedule collapsed, or Auburn was able to pick up a win over a pretty good team for the first time in a couple of years.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
If you truly care about your feet and want
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final segment of hour number one here on what is now a rainy Monday afternoon, and that's fine. Just hopefully there's, no damaging winds or anything like that, but we could use the rain. Let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Terry is up first. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill, Dan, Brian. How y'all doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks for calling us.
Did y'all hear the discussion last night on your station there in the Red Sox-Yankees game about how the glove over the mouth thing started?
No, I did not. That was
talking about it because Greg Maddux had started it in the mid-'80s, said against the Montreal Expos had a player who was deaf and he could read their lips really well.
Mm-hmm.
That's what started it.
No, and I'm sure as camera technology progressed,
right,
folks were worried about that as well. You know, being spied on or you know, especially if you, I don't know how much of the conversation you're going to be able to pick up on from far away, but I can understand guys being careful.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That was Maddux, isn't it?
People reading lips.
Oh yeah. Well, and now you look around and you see it in. You see it for sure all the time in football now. It's not a glove; it's cards or whatever to obstruct, you know, the coaches while they're saying something. Even you know, obviously they're saying it in the headphones, in the mics most of the time.
If they're talking catcher signals, is that something that could be useful down the road? Is that something that a team would want? You know, if you're seeing a pitcher and a catcher talk about preferred signals, could that be their preferred signals?
Only to the Houston Astros, Dan.
I don't know. I just it's interesting, but yeah, it does seem like it's out of concern for espionage.
Right. I want to ask Brian a quick football question, if I could, please. The two guys that decommitted last week.
Yes.
Is their commitment still open? Is that going on, or is that something that Auburn moved on? They've moved on.
I don't think either one of them have committed anywhere else. Yeah,
no, they haven't. Well, I mean, I think what Terry's wondering is you know, is Auburn still in the picture for them?
I believe so.
I would say more, probably less for Tyler Lockhart. I think they're still in the picture,
right,
but I think Mississippi State is going to be tough to beat,
right,
for Tyler Lockhart
because of his brother, I think,
right,
because of the family issues there,
and well, he's closer to home,
right?
There,
but we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I think it's an offensive lineman. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I mean, I know there've been Mississippi State ties. It was a bit of a surprise when he committed to Auburn in the first place.
Yeah, that is surprising. I didn't know he had a brother at Mississippi State, but that could answer a lot of questions. Appreciate it, guys. You have a wonderful day.
You too, Terry. Thanks for the call. 334-321-1390. Yeah, I mean,
and Cardi Smith is an interesting one. You know, he went out to USC on his official. I'm sure he got a lot of information.
I'm sure he did. That's a lot. Auburn's a whole lot closer to home. Right? I mean, we're going to come back to what we saw, the running back.
Oh, right. Ivan Henderson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be a similar situation. This is what I'll say about that. Auburn is recruiting some other tackles. So what could happen is Auburn could get.
Yeah, they could. They might just opt for other guys at tackles.
Possible. Right.
But I mean, I would say that if Auburn, you know, if Auburn really wants him, they will continue to recruit him.
Yep. I think that's a fact. Yep.
334-321-1390. Who we got, Drew?
Jeff
is up next. Hey, Jeff.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Doing fine.
Good. Hope you had a good holiday weekend.
Yeah, same too.
Back to business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a couple things. Brian, just trying to get an update on the North End scoreboard. Any status on that?
Oh, yes. Back in June, the BOT approved the final plans and the money for it, so it's moving forward.
Have you been by there lately?
No, have they actually started it?
You can see some of the framework is going up. Now, it's not going to be done until the 25 season,
right,
but you're going to be able to see the work and the infrastructure that is being prepared for more than just a scoreboard.
Exactly, which is really, really expensive because that is where the creek goes
right
under. And that's really delayed why they haven't replaced that scoreboard before now, is because of the weight of a new one and the weight of any construction over there. So they've started it now. It's supposed to be done before 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the focus on Auburn facility updates is going to be mainly on Jordan-Hare Stadium and mainly on the northern end of it, right?
I agree.
As far as
creating
more premium-type seating or premium opportunities.
Yeah, that's one thing that John Cohen has said every time he's been asked. He said, you know, you look there and it's just there's an area where that it hasn't been used, hasn't been tapped, and needs to be.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be immensely upgrading to recruiting and everything, because you look on that one end, and you see this big, shiny, bright light. Then you look on the other end, it looks like the black hole.
Yeah, well, that used to be over on the south end, right? That they moved.
Oh, yeah, that was the south scoreboard.
I can remember that back in the day.
It was a big one back then.
Yep, it was.
And it's way past time to go.
Also, with Big Cat upcoming, with Juju, is he scheduled to be at Big Cat?
I would say tentatively scheduled.
Yeah, I think he is on the invite list.
And I'd be surprised if he doesn't show up for it. So unless something changes as far as his recruitment and, you know, Auburn is not it for him or whatever. But, yeah, I think he'll probably be there.
Appreciate it, Jeff. We need to get to our top of the hour break. We're halfway done. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Look, I need... Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive, just getting underway here in the rain. Now, well, we're not in the rain, but the show is here in town. We're getting plenty of rain. I hope everybody doing well here on this 8th day of July. I hope everybody had a great 4th weekend. We are in the final week before SEC football media days. With the newly expanded Southeastern Conference, all 16 teams, and Texas proudly hosting.
Yeah.
And for that, they got the easiest schedule of anybody in the league they're welcomed into the SEC.
Yeah.
Dan's going to be heading out to Dallas. Jacob Goins of On the Line will be out there. Doug Amos, of course, who has the Max Roundtable, which you hear from 11 to 2. So all 7 hours of live programming going to be represented there in Dallas for SEC Media Days. Auburn, by the way, coming up on Thursday. And today, the SEC released the full list of attendees. And joining Coach Hugh Freeze, representing Auburn, will be linebacker Eugene Asante, defensive end Keldrick Falk, and quarterback Peyton Thorne. Those are your three representatives. You've got one offensive player, two defensive players, two seniors, and a sophomore.
Quite a few quarterbacks making the trip.
That is not unusual. You know who your starter is, it's almost a why isn't he here if he's your starting quarterback? As far as media days,
not all that shocking. Looking at the list right now, in no particular order, Blake Shapen from Mississippi State, the former Baylor starter, I believe, that joined the Bulldogs in the portal. Jackson Arnold, the sophomore quarterback from Oklahoma. Brady Cook from Missouri will be there. Quinn Ewers from Texas will be making the trip. You'll also have Jalen Milroe from Alabama. Peyton Thorne, we mentioned, from Auburn. Graham Mertz from Florida. Carson Beck from Georgia. Garrett Nussmeier from LSU. And Jackson Dart of Ole Miss, the quarterbacks.
How many is that? Like 9 or 10?
That is 1, 2, 3, that 4, is, that 5, is a lot, 6.
But it's not surprising. Usually, like 8. I said, usually if you know who your starting quarterback and he's not there, folks would wonder, well, why isn't he?
Nine quarterbacks making the trip.
Yeah. So Peyton Thorne, one of the nine, as we get ready.
Make it 10, Talen Green. I didn't notice he was at the bottom there, Arkansas. So quarterback, 10. Talen Green will be there as well.
10 of the 16. Who are the schools that aren't?
A couple of them are big names. I mean, we know Brock Vandergriff is the quarterback at Kentucky. He's not making the trip.
Right.
A&M's not bringing the quarterback, who's been the quarterback. Connor Wegman. Has been their quarterback the last couple seasons. Looks like he's going to be the quarterback again, but he's not making the trip. And South Carolina not bringing a quarterback after Spencer Rattler departure, and Tennessee's not bringing the high profile recruit Nico.
Yeah.
So it's a you know a couple schools that are and Vanderbilt not bringing a quarterback either, and the that's five of the and the other one would be
Oklahoma?
No, Oklahoma's bringing a quarterback. Kentucky is the only one on the second page, so Kentucky's not bringing a quarterback. South Carolina's not bringing a quarterback. Tennessee's not bringing a quarterback. A&M and Vanderbilt. Those are the teams that are not bringing quarterbacks to media days. Everyone else is bringing some pretty high-profile star power to SEC media days.
All right, so you're headed out there. Who are you interested in? I mean, who right now? I mean, there are going to be some players and probably a coach or two that surprise you. But, I mean, heading in, who are some that you're looking forward to hearing from?
Yeah, I'm curious just to see, you know, how some of the star quarterbacks are handling what I imagine is an off season under the microscope, especially in this day and age, Bill, right, where it's like, you know, not to get all grumpy old man on you, but I feel like if you're a starting quarterback in the SEC, now anywhere you go, the camera phones come out, and it's TMZ all the time if you're Quinn Ewers or if you're Carson Beck or if you're Jalen Milroe. I mean, Jalen Milroe's been he was at Talladega with the Jordan team. He was at Rickwood. He was on the field at the Rickwood game as an invited guest. I mean, he's lived a celebrity offseason.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm curious to see how guys like that. It seemed to be it wasn't getting to Stetson. But it did, because he had an incredible final season in college football. But he did seem to be like
he was enjoying it.
Yeah, I remember sort of seeing like realization that, I mean, I guess starting quarterbacks in the SEC have always been under the microscope in their own respective towns. It feels magnified now, and yeah, I'm curious to see how some of the biggest stars in the conference are holding up under that kind of scrutiny.
All right, so we're here this week. Should have the regular cast on schedule as we head through the week. It's Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio on this Monday. Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in, and you can do so by calling the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We're just underway here in hour number two of the Drive, which is brought to you once again by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic. I've got an appointment for next Wednesday. They are East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Jerry gets us started this hour. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Glad y'all are back.
Good to be back.
Yeah, I mainly wanted to call about Juju Lewis,
mm-hmm.
See if he was going to be at Big Cat.
We think he'll be there, but I don't think that'll be finalized until we get really close to Big Cat. But right now, I'd put him as tentatively going to be there, tentatively.
Well, you know, we're the closest university to his hometown. So, you know, we hopefully have an advantage.
Well, I mean, I felt like this for a while, but I think between Juju Lewis and KJ Lacy, Auburn's going to get one of those two, even though they're committed to other schools right now, as their number one quarterback in this class. So we'll see if that works out here. And I think it'll be settled before the end of this month, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. One other thing, I heard, I don't know if I heard this right or not, but I heard on the radio today that there was a lineman that committed to Georgia that used to be committed to the Auburn basketball team. And he's 6'10 and 340.
I'm trying to. I remember the kid about for Auburn basketball, the center.
The center, yeah.
I didn't realize he was also a football player.
I didn't know that he was a football player either.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on his name. I can see the video of the guy because he'd trimmed down a little bit during basketball season, but if he's 340, he's uh, he's put some of it back on to play football.
That's 340. Yeah. That's a monster.
Miles Kelly. Yep. No.
Miles Kelly's the Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Transfer. That's in.
We'll research this during the break and get back to you, Jerry.
I had not heard that, Jerry.
That's interesting.
We'll do some checking on it. But yeah, he was an early commitment to Auburn basketball, like almost a year ago, it seems like. And then decommitted from Auburn, and Auburn added the other two. I was thinking he was coming in this fall. I thought he was a 24 basketball player. But I'm blanking on his name. Usually I look at my phone and somebody has texted me the answer, but they have not yet.
I did just see a thing about how
Jazeer Jackson?
No, I don't think that's it. Well,
that's the 6'10 kid that committed to.
No, it is Jazeer Jackson.
I don't remember him being committed to Auburn. He's the
6'10 overtime elite player. Who is switching to football very late in his career.
Okay, I don't know that he was ever committed to Auburn.
Maybe he was an Auburn basketball recruit when he decided to go to Overtime Elite. Okay. I don't know about Auburn's connection to Jazeer Jackson, but I think Jazeer Jackson is the guy that Jared's asking about.
All right, that would make sense then.
Because he's the 6'10", 300-pounder who was a basketball recruit until very late in his career and is now going to be part of Auburn. And that's
But Jerry, I don't think he was ever I'm pretty close to 100% sure that he was never a commitment to Auburn basketball.
Yes, he's one of the incoming freshmen for Georgia's offensive line. CBS just wrote a story about the average size of the incoming linemen for the University of Georgia, and it's fairly shocking. Let's see what we got here. The 2024
Peyton Marshall was the decommit from Auburn.
Yes, yep. that's the guy. That's the guy who was the big center that had been committed to Auburn.
So Georgia's got seven incoming offensive linemen. They're all at least 6'5.5", including the one who's 6'10". They're all at least The guy who's 6'10 is the
lightest.
He's the lightest of the bunch at just 300 even. Everyone else is 320 or bigger. Three of them are 360 or bigger. And the true freshman offensive lineman coming in for Georgia. And yeah, one of them is a pretty incredible story Jazeer Jackson just committed to Georgia like that. I think that's the reason this is a story.
And he's a freshman. He's an incoming freshman who just committed. Now?
I think it's a fairly recent.
That's a pretty big story in itself. Of course, I mean when he's been a basketball player, so he is coming in definitely as a project.
Oh yeah, definitely. And Peyton Marshall actually signed with Missouri, and I guess he'll start there.
Right. Okay.
This year.
That's what I said. I thought he was one of the guys in this year's class. So I'm glad you brought that up. It triggered finding a couple of things there, Jerry. Anything else?
Huge.
Do what?
He's huge.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right.
Well, thanks, Jerry.
Glad you're back.
All right. 334-321-1390. Well, the Braves problems are all solved.
And Jazeer Jackson did commit this morning.
Yeah.
To Georgia. Overtime Elite had made it clear. I think people thought he was a Georgia player people thought Georgia led from the moment he announced that he was going to switch from basketball to football.
Where is he from originally? Is he from the state of Georgia as well?
He played let me see if I can find I think he's originally a Georgia kid. I'll look into that. I know he's listed as like IMG Academy and things like that, but I'm pretty sure he grew up in Georgia.
I just saw, speaking of news, things that happened today, I said the Braves have probably come up with the answer to all their questions as Eddie Rosario has been called up by the Braves after he was released by the Nationals. They're hoping that the lightning strikes twice because remember he was really struggling when they acquired him 3 years ago. And then he went on to become the, I guess he was the NLCS MVP.
He was outstanding for the Braves. Yeah. Part of that deadline after the Acuna injury in 2021, they added Jock, they added Rosario.
And Soler.
And they added Jorge Soler and got major contributions from all of those guys at the trade deadline. We'll see what the Braves do.
He had the eye problems, had the eye surgery, struggle, came back. Had a good year for the Braves last year. But this year was just, I mean, he was awful with the Nats. So we will see how. I'm sure the Braves, don't worry, Braves fans. The Braves are definitely, they are pursuing outfield help. I saw a number today that the Braves outfield right now is, I believe, 24th in Major League Baseball in OPS. I mean, they're really struggling. I think they're hitting like 240 with not much power as an outfield right now. And that's, of course, with Ronald Acuna out for the rest of the season and Michael Harris injured as well. We will get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Monday Drive.
MPAC, to be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 19 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody doing well and enjoying the summer, which is going quickly. Hard to believe, you know, we're in the second week of July. I mean, it is the time just flying. Auburn football picking up a couple of commitments. You heard anything about any of the workouts, Brian?
Football-wise?
Yeah.
Nothing important. I've heard they've been going well. I've heard they're really pleased with the way the freshmen are competing already, especially at DB, where they're going to have some guys step up there.
Yeah, well, they added they did add a transfer. I mean, I guess they could still add somebody else through the portal, add another player or two through the portal. They've still got spots.
They do.
I mean, they've got probably 7-8 spots left as far as scholarships are concerned.
Yeah, they added Jaquez Robinson, mm-hmm. Former Colorado and
Alabama. Yeah, he followed Charles Kelly from Alabama to Colorado, and now is at Auburn.
And he's experienced some injury situations, but from what I've heard, he's in good shape now, going into camp and ready to compete for a spot right away. I think he's a bigger DB. I think mm-hmm. he's probably a nickel or safety, but. Can play some different spots, and he's definitely one that can help out right away and a needed addition.
Well, that the corner spot, I mean, is one where there are going to be some young guys that are going to be getting opportunities. I mean, Keontae Scott is and Kay and Lee are your expected starters. Kay and Lee is just a true sophomore. Yep. But, I mean, the other guys that are there at corner are as young and less experienced.
They really are. I mean, Jay Crawford, a true freshman who we're told had a pretty good spring. He's going to have a chance to play a lot, I think, this fall. A lot like Kai and Lee last year, maybe not have to start, you know, unless mm-hmm. there's an injury or something.
You need more than two corners.
Yeah,
ooh, you really do.
And then Antonio Kite, the other transfer from Alabama, is a guy that's going to have to step up and play. And then J.C. Hart is a true freshman that I thought was one of the most improved players from day one of spring ball to day 15. I think he improved a lot during that time. So.
Well, I mean, he is a big athletic young man who, I mean, obviously really taken a huge step up in competition level. But, I mean, everybody that ever seen him play just, you know, has always raved about his athleticism.
Yes, and also very, very smart, very hard worker. So you can expect him to do everything the right way and have a full knowledge of the defense and everything, even for a young guy.
One thing I think that is good for these guys is they're getting to go against the young receivers too.
Yeah, and some much more talented receivers, and not just young receivers anymore. Because guys like Keandre Lambert Smith, the mm-hmm. transfer from Penn State, is here. Robert Lewis from Georgia State came in the spring, give Auburn some more veteran help there.
I like what we saw of Sam Jackson, who was banged up and, you know, didn't go through full contact this mm-hmm. spring. But, I mean, he didn't look out of place at receiver at all. Didn't look like he was, you know, that far behind, because he's a guy that was a receiver, you know, up through, I guess, through his junior year or so in high school when Peyton Thorne was his quarterback.
Yeah, but between him and Bryce Kane, I think Auburn has some real speed and just
slot guys.
Yeah, guys who can get behind a defense mm-hmm. and really surprise them out of that slot position.
Yeah, so I mean, there's no question there's reason for enthusiasm. But I agree when Dan was asking earlier when media days when the projections come up, I fully expect Auburn to be somewhere in the 8 to 10 range, probably somewhere like that in the predictions.
I think eight. I think someone voting Auburn 8 would be more bullish on Auburn than the pack. That doesn't mean they're going
to
be wrong.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Auburn, 11, 12.
Yeah, I kind of think that folks who think Auburn will overperform will vote Auburn as a single digit team, and the folks that are more in wait and see mode might put Auburn at 10 or lower.
If you're thinking Auburn's number 12, do you think it was nothing but just the home field advantage and being looked past by Georgia and Alabama last year?
Well, I think
it's Auburn so much. I think Auburn has improved themselves a lot more than some of the other teams that would be there in that middle range.
I think it's more about like the makeup of the rest of the conference, right? Because I'm looking at it as okay, well, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Mississippi State seem like a pretty clear-cut 16, 15, 14 to me.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina replacing
Spencer Rattler.
Maybe they makes after an unremarkable year last year. Florida, those are maybe teams I think people might be tempted to. But I'm running out of teams that the consensus is Auburn is better.
Oh, the consensus is, I don't think
you'd vote Auburn over Kentucky.
I don't think Kentucky's more talented than Auburn.
I think it's probably right. I think it's probably. I mean, that's fair to say. I think we're going to find out how much of Kentucky, like you were saying earlier, we're going to find out how much of Kentucky's success has been. Well, you were playing an SEC East schedule.
I think a good bit.
I mean, Missouri and Kentucky both have to deal with. Now you got A&M and Oklahoma and Auburn and teams like that on the schedule that maybe weren't on the schedule when you were exclusively playing in the SEC East. But I would guess Auburn's finish would be predicted.
It's probably 10 to 12.
Yeah, I'm thinking 10 to 12 and maybe 11 if folks have them over Florida. And then probably Kentucky and Auburn competing for that 11-10 spot. But no, wouldn't be shocking at all. Did you hear the question, Doug? Asked me earlier.
No, I didn't get a chance to hear it.
So Doug was, I guess they were doing a conversation about, if you offered an Alabama fan a guaranteed 10-2 regular season right now, would they take it in year one for Kalen DeBoer? If you offered an Auburn fan a guaranteed 8-4 season in Hugh Freeze's second year, would you take it right now? And Doug was sort of monitoring the splits there, and I was. I don't know. It's an interesting question. As far as how would 8-4 go, and depending on who you beat,
8-4 is probably fine. 8-4 would probably be fine depending on how you play in those four losses.
If you
won eight games, but you were embarrassed by Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma and A&M or Missouri.
Yeah, or Missouri.
I mean, if you were spanked four times and won eight games, but you didn't beat any of your largest opponents, I don't know that would feel very good.
I mean, 8-4 does mean
be thrilled with taking
with
it.
With this schedule, 8-4 does mean that you probably beat somebody with a pulse.
You beat somebody.
Yeah, I mean,
what if Kentucky is not very good?
Right.
Kentucky
and A&M both struggle.
If they're just teams, if they're 500 teams, so what?
Right.
Yeah, you could go 8-4 and might look up and not have a win over a team with a winning record.
And you know what? And as somebody who enjoys the unpredictability of these things, I would probably turn down the deal at 8-4 and say, let's roll the dice and see what happens.
I want to see.
Now,
yeah.
Here was my counter.
I need more
though.
Details.
If you now, how about this? 8-4. But one of the eight wins is either in Tuscaloosa
or Georgia.
Is either in Tuscaloosa or Athens. That becomes a tougher deal to turn down.
It does, but I still,
because it's been so long since you've won in either of those stadiums.
But what if we'll do this? What if you did beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa and Alabama's an 8-4 team, and then you lose by four touchdowns to Georgia and to Oklahoma and Missouri and Kentucky.
Yeah.
Then no, it's still like, oh, it's cool that you beat Alabama, but if you beat a, you know, if you beat a very disappointing Alabama team, I don't know, it would make your, you know,
I am more inclined to happy. I would be more inclined to accept the 8-4 offer myself if you included the caveat that one of the 8 wins is a road win over Alabama or Georgia, because it's been so long since Auburn's beaten either of those teams. That would be a mark of progress, I think, for Hugh. That'd be something Hugh Freeze. I mean, winning in either of those stadiums.
Probably. Unless Kalen DeBoer is Brian Harsin, which I don't think that's the case at all.
If it's loss number
but
5.
I mean, you know, if they're terrible.
Well, then Hugh Freeze could maybe get to say he's the last coach to beat Kalen DeBoer at Alabama before they made a change, if something like that happens. Doug countered with, if you offered Alabama fans 10-2, but one of the two losses is a home loss in the Iron Bowl, absolutely not. Bama fans might be inclined to take 10-2 and a guaranteed spot in the college football playoff.
Sure,
if that was the offer you could get right now.
If it included a loss to
Auburn. No, that was the caveat.
I think they'd probably take 10-2 and a spot in the playoffs.
10-2 and a spot in the playoffs, but one of the two losses is a home loss in the Iron Bowl.
Because that would mean that by then they already had a place locked in, and they could say, here's what they would say
to Auburn starters.
We're just looking ahead. You know, that game didn't matter. We knew that game didn't matter. We're just looking ahead. We're giving you know.
Which is crazy to think, Bill, that we could reach a point in college football where and that's when I wonder, do you move the rivalry games off of the last week of the season? Now that we're expanding the playoff, do you consider moving the rivalry games off of the end of the season so you don't have situations where, yeah, we might rest our starters in the Iron Bowl because we're 11-0 and we already know we're going to the SEC championship game next week. And if we win that, we're a top 4 team. Like it's crazy to think like those kind of conversations would happen in college football, yeah. And they didn't happen when you had a 2-team playoff.
No, you're right.
But now
it's 12, and they want it to be more.
I would be open to moving rivalry games. I know that's like a sacred thing, but I'd be open to especially if you start seeing starters getting rested at the end of the regular season. I would be very open to moving rivalry games off of the end of the season in an expanded football era.
I like Auburn Georgia in October. I like
how I do.
There.
I do.
But I absolutely 100% want the Iron Bowl to be in November, the final game of the season, period.
I think they should be.
Yeah. I do too. The only reason I would start to waver from I would waver from that if you started seeing situations where teams that are in the playoff and feel good about their position.
If they're resting starters in November, ever feel like college football again? If you start doing that, it is. You know, the NFL.
And what's crazy is you could see the strategy of an 11-0 team, an 11-0 team saying, you know what, starters are only going to play half this game because we don't want to risk a quarterback or something.
Golly, if you do that,
you're not just fighting to get in the playoffs, you're fighting for home field advantage. You're fighting for a bye.
Seeding.
Right, yeah.
So but then you've also got the SEC championship game a week later. Like you've got you know, those which will play a big role in deciding, you know, who's seated where in the playoff too. Like I don't want rivalry games moved, but I also don't want starters being rested in big games in college football. And if that second one starts happening, then maybe you think about moving the rivalry games off the traditional dates.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I'd hate it.
It would almost get to the point then where it would be you'd have to start having some rules of if you did this, then you're going to be penalized that.
It would be a sign the playoffs too big.
Yeah.
How about that? It would be a sign that too many teams are making the postseason if teams are like, you know, we feel good enough about our spot that we're going to we're gonna punt this last regular season game and give our guys some time to rest. Mm.
We'd love your thoughts on that or anything else sports-wise. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Plenty of time for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, sports-wise?
The negotiations continued during the commercial break as to like what kind of season you would need to guarantee for us to push the hypothetical.
I would sign for a 9-3. I would sign for a 9-3, especially Did you say that was
nine and three?
I pretty much signed for a. I'd take a 9-3.
Nine and three.
I don't think I'd ask any questions.
Your likeliest losses would be three of the road games in that situation.
Of course, I mean it could maybe it's a situation where, yeah, you still don't beat anybody with much better than a 500 record. But I'm going from seven losses a year for three years to a 9-3. I'm taking it.
Yeah, it would. I'll tell you what, if Auburn were to go 9-3 without a significant win, it would be kind of surprising. I guess that would require
Oklahoma having a bad season, Kentucky having an off season, Texas A&M having an off season.
It would require all three of those teams to be 7-5 or worse, probably, and 4-4 in the league.
I don't care.
Or worse.
I would take it. Yeah, I would take it. Brian was even easier than that. Brian said he'd just take 8-4.
Three
period.
Straight losing seasons. Give me 8 wins, and let's roll into the next year.
All right, so what are you, our listeners? What would you just sign off for, sight unseen? What's the lowest you would settle for? Like I said, with 8-4, I need to know some of the details. I need to know how does Auburn lose?
I did come up with
a scenario where how do they play in those losses?
You know what would sell me on 8-4? I told you this during the commercial break.
A win over Georgia in Athens.
Yep. If you told me the thing that would get me to push the button
I'm afraid then you're getting into the but you lost to somebody you shouldn't have lost to
Cal or something. Cal and Oklahoma beat you and you went to Athens and shocked the world or something as a 28 point underdog.
Just because you did that. I mean, so you go there and Georgia turns the ball over 8 times and you beat them on a last second fluke or something and then you get your brains handed to you in some other games. I don't like that.
You know, Georgia hasn't lost a regular season SEC game since the COVID year. Like, it's three straight. I mean, they've lost the SEC championship game, but it's three straight years where they're sitting at 8-0
in conference. Yeah,
in conference play. Right. I don't care if it's the interception game. Give me a win in Athens, and you can sell me on 8-4. I need to feel like
Auburn has definitely taken that step, that big that step that you usually see when a team is making progress. You see that second year. It's like, all right, here's the culture, here's the chemistry, the step, the program's making that step in the right direction. I want to see that.
Great, and that's I understand why you're reluctant to push the button on 8-4. You know, at any point in there, because you want to see the progress instead. Because you were also saying if you say 8-4 with either a win in Tuscaloosa or Athens, there's the caveat of this is a big new season for Alabama. You don't really know.
Give me 9-3. It's going to be tough to say. That doesn't count.
Yeah, but Hugh Freeze could dine out on a win in Athens for a very long time.
He could,
regardless of what else happens. But boy, that would be a feather to put in the. Because I imagine Hugh Freeze has heard from some Auburn people that remember when they used to beat Georgia all the time in Athens.
You know what?
I remember.
It's getting but the thing is, those folks are getting older and older. It's like,
well, do you think
it would just what did you say? It's almost been 20 years.
2005 was Auburn's last win. So
it's been 19 years since Auburn won an Athens.
It's like 7 coaches ago. But you know what, Bill? You're right. But I also don't imagine it's young people making a ton of those big money decisions with Hugh Freeze at the.
You're probably right.
I think some of those folks might be nostalgic for an era, for a bygone era there. But now there are. Yeah, a couple of teams in the SEC that just go into the season looking like they're in excellent position. Georgia, because their roster is one of them. Texas, because their roster is one of them. I maintain Missouri, in part because of what they bring back from that great year they had last year.
But in part because of their schedule.
Yes, we were talking to Brian about it during the break. I mean, Missouri's got, respectfully, 8 layups on a 12-game schedule. You got 4 non-conference games you should win. And 4 games against the teams that I think will be predicted at the bottom of the SEC in Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and South Carolina. And it's like between that, I mean, you win 2 of Auburn, Oklahoma, A&M, and Alabama, you're almost assuredly a playoff team.
That's crazy.
Like if you win 2 of those,
and
four,
I mean they're 10-point favorites over Auburn
right now. I believe One Service had Missouri predicted as a double-digit favorite over Auburn in that game, and they're even bigger favorites in the other 8. So it feels like a year where, I mean, and I know Missouri has gone into seasons with big expectations, and it hasn't gone well for them in the past. This would be a crushing year to fall flat.
Oh, if they do this year, then nobody will ever believe in them again.
It'd be crushing to drop, you know, drop all four of the swing games and lose another one or two of the supposed layups, and it would be just a crushing year for Eli Drinkwitz, who seems to have a ton of momentum going into the season, and understandably so. Like they're a top five, top six SEC team.
All right, Brian. So you're ready to sign up for an 8-4? What right now? Just looking at the schedule, what do you see Auburn going?
8-4.
There it is.
But I do think they got a chance to be 5-0. So maybe 9-3 makes more sense. But
well, the thing is, the first thing they have to do is they've got to win the home games. Right. Oklahoma should be, I think, Auburn's toughest home game.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they're going to win at Georgia. I absolutely think they could win at Missouri. That's going to be an early game.
Mm-hmm. Although Missouri's used to those. Yes, seems true. Like, you know, Missouri's almost a they wanted to be a Big Ten school. So, I mean, you know, they sort of like that, you know, big noon kickoff kind of thing.
Missouri and Kentucky are both games that I think people don't look at traditionally as, oh, those be huge wins for your program if you can go there and win. But right now, for an Auburn team that hasn't beaten an SEC team that finished above 500 since Bo Nix was the quarterback, I mean, you're starved for wins over quality opponents. Mm-hmm. You go win at either of those places. And granted, they're in different situations. Missouri's preseason top 10 team. Kentucky, I think some folks might include them in the top 25. They're probably also getting votes.
Right, right. You know, sort of. They're in the talk as being a top 25. That's where I would say Auburn's best shot on the road is Kentucky. It doesn't mean that they can't win at Missouri. I'm not saying they can't win in Tuscaloosa. I'm saying it's very unlikely that they win in Athens.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I would put it in that order.
And Vandegrift strikes me as one of the bigger X factors in the conference this year, because he's a highly – I mean, he was – I believe – I looked at it earlier today, and it's like Caleb Williams and Quinn Ewers were the quarterbacks ranked ahead of Brock Vandegrift coming out of high school. It's pretty good. You're better than everybody, but Quinn Ewers.
It is, but if that were the case, it seems like he would have played a little more.
You would have thought, although Carson Beck has been excellent in two seasons at Georgia, and before that it was Stetson, so it wasn't as though there was a clear path for Vandegrift to get on the field.
But Stetson Bennett wasn't on anybody's list.
I know. The question would be, like, we're going to find out fairly quickly what Vandegrift is, and if he's able to be a top tier SEC quarterback immediately. Then I think it changes your complexion of what Kentucky is, like of what kind of team they are.
You're absolutely right.
Like right now, I think we're talking about Kentucky as they're outside the top 25. They're probably not one of the top six or seven teams in the league. If you told me they had a top three or top four quarterback on that team,
absolutely.
I'd change my mind a little bit about them, right?
Like, I mean, I've got to see it to believe it.
I got to see it to believe it too. I think it's impossible to predict it without it. But that's one where. Yeah, I'm really interested if Vandegrift is the goods, and if he is, Kentucky is a team that suddenly looks a lot more dangerous.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's Auburn's best shot. But as I was saying, Brian, I mean, Auburn's got to win the home games.
That's big to me. They've just got to have a winning season and put behind them three straight losing seasons. That's not Auburn football. That's not what they're here for. If they can have a winning season,
yeah, it hasn't been Auburn football in over a half century,
right?
They've
got another great recruiting class coming in. They take the step forward with two or three more extra wins this year. You're going to feel a lot better about that team coming back in 2025. Plus, you know, you'll have Alabama and Georgia back at home that year, which makes a big difference.
334-321-1390.
I got more Jazaire Jackson info from the ESPN story about the monster former elite basketball recruit. 6'11", 340 is what he's officially listed at from Georgia. Georgia signed him earlier today. He is signed. He's going to be in classes, he's already on campus with plans to enroll next month. They plan to play him a little bit this year, but I think the plan is to redshirt him and see what happens down the road. Grew up in San Diego. One-time AAU teammate of Bronny James,
San Diego. Okay,
yeah, had multiple D1 offers by as a football player by the end of middle school, but shifted from basketball, shifted from football to basketball as he kept getting taller. When
so he hasn't played football since
ninth grade.
Since ninth grade.
Ninth grade was
okay. Don't expect to see him on the field for a while unless they're bringing him in to try to block kicks.
The other
if he's got a decent vertical.
Jacksonville State also has a 6'11" offensive lineman. They are the two tallest active players in college football.
That can be difficult sometimes. Being that tall.
There have only been, according to Pro Football Reference, there have only been two players at the NFL Combine to measure over 6'9" in the last 25 years. One of them, former Georgia offensive lineman Dennis Roland, and the other one is a current offensive lineman for the Detroit Lions, Dan Skipper. But it's rare to see players.
Yeah, Louisiana Tech played against Auburn here.
That's right. Remember Skipper, the big offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. So it's a it's unusual, but yeah, I mean this is a guy who went through NBA draft stuff with the overtime elite players earlier this year. And after going through the draft, I guess got enough feedback.
They said, "Boy, you look like a football player."
I guess he got enough feedback that you know what?
If you play basketball like a football player.
Well, if you get an offer from Georgia the moment you announce you're switching sports, maybe you.
Well, the thing is, Georgia though. Let's say this: Georgia is also in a position to be able to do that because they have so much talent that they can take a chance. They can take more of a chance on somebody that they think, man, this guy could be a superstar in a couple of years, because they don't have to have, you know, every player doesn't have to be able to step right in and help them now because they've got plenty of talent.
Clemson had offers from Florida, Florida State, Mississippi State, and Arkansas as well in his fairly whirlwind recruitment since announcing his switch from football from basketball to football. But yeah, Jahzaire Jackson, just an unusual story to pop across the wire in July. I think it's Brian. It's pretty unusual for a high school player to be making a class of 24 signee to be signing right now anyway. Right,
very unusual.
Yeah,
it was more. It happened more back in the day when you'd have all the qualifying issues and guys would get qualified late, or guys maybe coming out of junior college, or back in the day, there were a lot more prep school guys you'd recruit.
So. Guys that had to go to summer school were taking their classes and now got qualified.
But lately, it's been very uncommon, even with the transfer portal by this time of the year.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon when we come back. We've got calls we will get to, so stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
Attention large property owners and adventure seekers. If you're looking for a reliable and powerful offer.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of the Monday Drive. And let's get right back to the phones. And Jerry's back with us. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Isn't that amazing?
What's that?
The signing of the Georgia lineman for 6'10" and 340.
I mean, I think people look at the physical attributes, and he did play. He was a football prospect before switching to basketball. Granted, it was a couple of years ago, but you know, I guess folks would say he's not like he's just been sitting on the couch, you know, eating chips for these last couple of years. He's been working as a high level basketball recruit, winning championships with Overtime Elite, and making the switch. I mean, I think, like Bill was saying, it's going to take a more secure organization. Although you heard Florida and Arkansas mentioned.
That's true, but offensive line generally takes you a while to develop anyway, and here's a guy. Now, the good thing may be that he doesn't have any bad habits because he hasn't been playing football for a while.
You know, you remember when we heard from Auburn's offensive lineman when they signed the Berlin Wall a couple years ago, right? Remember Killian was kind of new to football?
He was. I think back to Prince Tega.
Auburn
got,
sure.
You know, guys like that. Doesn't mean they can't help you, but generally it's
princes,
not going to be immediate.
Right? Auburn had two princes, like the Spin Doctors.
Yeah, sure did. Yeah, Sammons.
Prince
Michael Sammons.
Yeah, Prince Sammons. Yeah, there we go. There's a name we haven't said in a couple of years on the show. But no, I think that is a position, and you see some of it at running back and receiver too, where you think, you know what, if the athleticism is overpowering and they have prototype size. Maybe
you can't teach 6'10".
Can't teach that.
340 pounds.
True. Yeah.
I mean, you might be able to teach 340, but you can't teach 6'10". Can't teach somebody who's 6 feet tall to be 6'10".
All right. Enjoy.
Hi, Jared. Appreciate the call. Brian, four out of time. We started, you talked about the musical musings. Talk about the rest of Monday musings and then everything that's going on there at AuburnSports.com.
Appreciate it. And of course, they are sponsored by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
Absolutely.
Available locally at Publix, Piggly Wiggly, here in Auburn at Kroger's, Renfro's in your area. Also order online. And if you want to do that, you can get 15% off with the discount code BMAT15. So check
I gotta
that
remember
out.
To do that because I've got all kinds of incentives to do that. That's great.
Today I just talked a little bit about what's happening in the NCAA with the Power Four getting more autonomy to make their own rules, to basically have their own division. I don't know if it'll be officially called a different division or not. We'll see. But they're going to have basically home rule, and they'll be able to make up their own rules involving roster sizes, how they pay their players, how they bring in revenue, just a lot of different things you're going to see change over the coming years because of that. And they also mentioned that the biggest looming question, I think, with that is the NCAA basketball tournament. And I think a lot of people are against anybody taking it from the NCAA, such as the Power Four schools, because they love how it is right now. My take on that is the NCAA has been a completely inept institution. They've failed the member institutions over and over with their lawsuits that they've lost, the billions of dollars they've forced members of institutions have to pay out. So I don't necessarily think it would be a bad thing for the Big Four to take over, the Power Four to take over the NCAA tournament, and maybe add another $400 million or so to their coffers, which they badly need with the amount of money they have to be paying out now. So that was my call for this week.
That's great. And then, of course, everything going on there at AuburnSports.com. I mean, you've got all the coverage of the recruiting and all the other sports.
Yep. We'll be covering we'll be keeping up with who could commit. Blake Woodby is a guy to keep in mind here, the cornerback from Baltimore. We'll be having updates on Big Cat coming up here in a few more weeks and anything else that pops up over the next several weeks before Big Cat. All that more, AuburnSports.com. Follow me on Twitter /threads at BMATAU.
Great stuff, Brian. Always, always good to have Brian here in the studio. Andy Burcham should be back with us tomorrow in hour number one. Jake Crane in the second hour. We'll talk to you then. That's going to do it for the Monday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.